This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
So I would say the day-to-day function of the strategy team has changed permanently, I hope. And what these teams can also do for organizations right now is reshape the goals.
Hello, and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm Kelly Richard, and I'm here with my co-host, Trevor Durin.
Hello.
Today, we have a lot of expertise in the room. Joan Moss, Senior Principal, leader of our intelligence team and CNO here at SG2, and Bill Woodson, Senior Principal and Senior Most Thought Leader on Intel. Thank you both for being here with us today.
Thank you, Kelly.
Good morning.
As is custom with our Grill Bill series, for this episode, we are going to pepper both Joan and Bill with questions about the state of healthcare in our new COVID-19 reality. So let's get started with a status check. We focused quite a bit on our content on recovery, as well as how healthcare will be evolving and changing permanently. Both of you are speaking with clients every day. Where do most health systems stand? Are they all over the board, or are you seeing any specific trends?
Thanks, Kelly. It's a tricky question, and as we record this today, to take stock of where we are, and it truly is regional, if not local. Nationally, let's call February denial. March was the Northeast surge. April was stay at home. May was elective procedure recovery. And as we speak today, we're really concerned about the South, Southern United States, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. Having said that, what we can generalize is what we tend to have conversations about. I put in six categories and that are likely to stay with us even as we evolve out of this next phase or into a next phase. First is that systems have evolved to a different mode of decision-making, meaning they're able to make faster, agile decisions, change direction, and they're getting things done in weeks or months that used to take them multiple cycles. And that's a positive. The second area is appreciation and attention to the workforce. And I spoke with one CEO this week who said, while the customer is always right, we're really paying attention to our workforce. If we take care of them, including financially right now, that translates into a better consumer experience. And I think that's another great positive out of this. Third would be permanent changes to the system of care, and our members are wrestling through what those are, and especially in the areas of virtual health, post-acute care services, sites of care shift, and what happens with the future of the emergency department, urgent care, and other online approaches to healthcare. Fourth would be a positive aspect of clinical care. And so this crisis or the cycles we've been through have allowed larger systems to develop or implement clinical pathways in a systematic way, in a consistent way. And this relates to our theme of clinical scale at SG2. So we anticipate there's been a breakthrough in clinical scale that will hold moving forward. Fifth would be a future tie that may be permanent to public health in the communities. As state-level public health agencies have been overwhelmed, it's been the hospitals and health systems that have stepped in to provide support. And in many parts of the country, that's included helping businesses plan for reopening, training them, inspecting them, and also connecting more firmly with the public health agencies. And then finally is important to our parent company, the supply chain. And what will certainly come out of this is a focus on resilience and redundancy, making sure that we have some domestic base capacity. We'll see storage capabilities. We're going to stockpile in different ways. How regions work across the country will certainly evolve. That's a lot to digest, but Joan, anything to add to that?
You mentioned workforce already, and it's extremely important. But I think as it comes to providers, physicians, there's just new opportunity, and I think a willingness to kind of not only align with financially and clinically with the health system. But I think, as you say, there's been a resurgence, if you will, about clinical care redesign, and we need that physician leadership. So I'm optimistic about that, although it's been tough these last 4 months.
The additional piece of this is something you and I have spoken about with others, which is this is probably a once in a lifetime opportunity for health system leaders to rethink their medical groups, how they work, how they're constructed, the skill mix and the compensation models, all that's in play. Again, that's probably a positive moving out of this.
Agree.
Joan, I'm going to ask you to go deeper on one thing that Bill mentioned quickly, and that's post-acute. I mean, we've seen big portions of COVID patients and COVID deaths coming from nursing homes. How is the post-acute landscape going to have to change in the future?
Yeah, boy, Trevor, COVID certainly exposed the quality the infection control, the staffing limitations in some of our post-acute care sites. We've had a STAR program in terms of, for example, evaluating home care and skilled nursing facilities and others. And it hasn't gotten much particular attention from the public in the past, but I believe that is changed. As patients and their families were very reticent about going particularly to skilled nursing beds because those are often in long-term care facilities, we had been forecasting about a 3 or 4% decline in the next few years in skilled nursing. We're now predicting in the next 5 years a 12% decline in skilled nursing admissions, in spite of the fact, obviously, that we have an aging population. But what has opened up is home care. For example, we have members talking about SNF, skilled nursing, at home to be able to bring those short-term rehabilitation or those short-term medical services into the home. And so on that side of the ledger, we're predicting 6% increase in home care for the next 5 years, but overall a 15% increase in the next 10 years. The big challenge here is workforce, but it's very, very interesting. Just last week, CMS announced they issued their first proposal to maintain flexibility in telehealth. And where is the site of care that they're recommending? Home care. So telehealth, as you know, has just exploded during COVID. But specific to home care, they can make this as part of regulatory change. They want to continue to use telehealth and home care related to the skilled services. So those are their nursing therapy services provided in the home. And although the proposed language does not allow you to, quote, substitute for an in-person visit. In other words, on a heart failure patient, if you typically provide 12 visits over the course of home care treatment, all 12 of them can't be telehealth. But they are going to allow telehealth to change the frequency and type of visit. We have been searching for a while, in my opinion, to accelerate the adoption of telehealth in home care. And I think COVID has actually been the accelerant that we've been looking for to home care adoption of technology. So like many crises, there is change for the better, I do believe, on the quality and infection control side in skilled nursing beds. We are addressing it. Many of our acute care healthcare systems are working with public health. If there is a hot spot or a facility in their community, they're providing their infection control experts, their nurses to come in and do an evaluation of every resident in that facility and look at the infection control and clinical practices. And then again, on the other hand, I think it opens many doors to a more efficient technology leverage telehealth service in home care.
And you mentioned some of these changes that are likely to carry us into the future and may become more permanent. If we're expecting more of a fall winter surge, or maybe in some cases we're seeing a surge now and we may see multiple in the future, do you think health systems are better prepared than the first time around? And if not, what do you think they can do to better weather the storm next time around?
At least a week ago, or this maybe 2 weeks ago, the answer to this would be, yes, we are prepared. We're better prepared. And that cuts across the board, including supply chain, PPE, staffing, the ability to segregate patients. There's a great deal of humility, of course, coming in right now because of what's going on in the South. There is concern about how a surge, depending on which market we're talking about and what the curve looks like, coincides with seasonal flu. And the ability to even tell the difference between the two as patients present, that will add some complexities to this. There is some time to plan for it. I think some of the wild cards will be, depending on the structure and organization and their footprint, can they kind of run parallel systems, part of their system dedicated to these patients who reemerge and can be in dedicated space, and part that's able to also operate with elective procedures and other types of care that will certainly be needed in the community, and then a normal amount of medical surgical care. But depending on this hits, that may shake the confidence of the workforce and to what extent they feel safe. And we have to do some coaching and planning around that. The other wild card has been and will continue to be how consumers will feel about this in the system. It will tie to the shape of the economy as well, including the financial health of health systems. But the short answer is, Kelly, we've learned so much. The clinicians, at least on some of the calls I've been on, have said we kind of know the drill now. We're humbled by it, but we think we'll be able to manage it.
Yes. And I think, too, as we know, to really try to target and protect the most vulnerable from exposure, i.e., you know, more elderly patients, those with pre-existing conditions, comorbid conditions, hopefully, again, that along with better understanding and having some improved treatment support in terms of ventilator management and being prudent about that care pathway, I think we are in a clinically from a care pathway standpoint and a clinical management standpoint in better shape. So that's good. And I think on the supply chain side, many of our members at Vizient and other organizations are working much more closely with their GPO than ever before. And there is an interdependence here that we never would have anticipated. As a nurse, it never ever occurred to me that PPE wouldn't be readily available in terms of clinical practice. But boy, as a health system, we certainly discovered that risk and that exposure.
And Joan, do you think that we are in a better place as an industry in terms of being prepared with the amount of PPE needed this time around?
I believe we are as organizations, and certainly we've created some national manufacturing capability. We have much better information and data regarding what they call product profiles from sort of raw material to production. We have better tracking systems. And frankly, with the GPOs working with FEMA, it's not a perfect system, but thinking about where to distribute PPE. Last week, I was up at my home in Montana. Now, Montana, again, very small rural state. Really, in many ways, you wouldn't even think there was much of a pandemic up there. Very small mortality rate, which is great. The need for ventilator PPE support, that care and those supplies, if we can get in and continue to improve our supply chain, those supplies as are needed, maybe in a Seattle or a San Francisco, we have to have that kind of national eye to our supply chain distribution. And I believe we've gotten better with that.
Bill, I'm going to jump back to one of the things you mentioned at the beginning here, and that's around how much health systems value and want to take one of the key learnings from this, that they were able to make rapid decisions, and how do they maintain that going forward. Some of it's around centralization, but some of it's just around a mindset. And a lot of that's going to fall on strategy teams to be kind of the owners of the process and the data inputs to allow decision makers to make rapid decisions. How are they going to do that?
Trevor, you may have just answered the question better than I could answer it. There's two approaches to this that I've heard. And one is systems that fairly early on recognized that, you know, let's split the team, the senior team in half, and we'll dedicate some to COVID and response in the here and now. And then let's take others and say, work on our midterm and longer term future. Let's think of this as a strategic moment and keep our eye on opportunities in the marketplace, a growth mindset coming out of this, whatever that might look like. That's not every system. Not every system has the capability to do that. Others have just turned into almost scenario planning shops. So if you're an effective strategy and planning function, you're supporting clinical care, patient services, but of course the finance team on a weekly basis with different modeling approaches. And now that includes using some of the tools from SG2 in our forecasting capabilities, not only kind of our medium and longer term impact of change forecast, but we're getting ready to roll out a short term, which is a month to month forecast on how markets will evolve, come out of this and change, even as the economy may be a bigger driver than COVID moving out of this. So I would say the day-to-day function of this strategy team has changed permanently, I hope. And what these teams can also do for organizations right now is reshape the goals. So we've had discussions with teams the last couple of weeks about, you know, we have to reset the organization about what we're trying to achieve in which domains, and then take that message to the board. And the positive thing is the boards are actually coming to management saying, you know what, this is such a different time in healthcare. You tell us what the metric should be. So I sense a different cadence and a different type of measurement approach coming out of this.
And Joan, just to bring it back a little bit to the clinical perspective, and maybe imagine being a chief nursing officer at a hospital like you once were, and possibly that connection point between strategy and the clinical side. How do you see the impact on the clinical workforce in the near term?
Yes, those are always challenging jobs. And first, I just want to state thank you to all of our frontline providers, the physicians, nurses, hospitalists, respiratory therapists, phlebotomists, the whole team. They have provided unending compassionate care at the time of a pandemic, which is obviously a first in our lifetime as clinicians, and really stepped up. I think what we're hearing from health system executives and CNOs, morale, building resilience in the team, being flexible and innovative, again, team-based care. These are the kinds of positive things that have to be focused on along with the strategy. Workforce is always a strategic issue. It will continue to be so. And I think what we, as some of staff have been furloughed, I think we're going to see, and we're going to need to watch this, at least in the nursing teams, how many retirements are accelerated as a result of this, as hospitals try to balance their further growth and expansion against the cost pressures they're under. This is going to be a balancing act, because I am hearing more and more those nurses who are nearing retirement may just simply be opting to retire a bit earlier. And so we have an aging nurse workforce anyway. And in some key areas like surgical services and critical care, we're going to just need to watch that balance very carefully. But if we go to the next step in terms of what do we need to do from a workforce perspective, knowing everything we had regarding regional shortages before COVID, and now the complexity of COVID added to the formula, I'd say there's three things that clinical leaders need to be focused on. First, changing who does the work. We need to look, as we have in the past, but with more rigor, at top of license practice. And we need to look at supporting team-based care. The one example, patient-centered medical homes, again, fundamental to them is team-based care. It is clinically rewarding to work as a team. And so I think for job satisfaction and retention, team-based care becomes extremely important. Secondly, we need to make the work more efficient. I've already mentioned leveraging technology in home care. We need to look across the continuum of care at all of our clinical care paths and say, where can voice recognition improve, you know, again, documentation? Where does patient monitoring, wherever that monitoring occurs, and the responsiveness, either through a command center or some other area of the organization, to continuous patient monitoring? Artificial intelligence. I think we're just scratching the surface on what AI can bring to the efficiency and the way we organize care for patients. And then the third area is to redesign the work. There is still tremendous clinical variation. And the most recent follow-up study from the Vizient Research Institute indicated that the variation within a health system is greater than when you compare one health system against another. Now, that is a very sobering statistic. And as Bill mentioned, clinical scale is important going forward. And if we can't reduce the clinical variation in practice within the same health system, it is going to be hard to achieve the clinical scale we're looking for. So again, three things: think about who's doing the work. Secondly, make the work more efficient. And third, redesigning the care pathways and the work itself.
One thought about the efficiency aspect of things and who's doing the work. We already saw a sort of a rise of the mid-level. Do you think that that's going to be amplified by this situation, specifically given that health systems are already in some financial straits? Are we going to see more of a demand for the mid-level versus just physicians? Could we see physicians even being laid off or a decreased demand for them?
Actually, when we looked before COVID, we were looking at the annual salary increases by specialty and then physician compared to, for example, advanced practice nurses or PAs. The advanced practice providers' salary increases exceeded last year most physicians across specialties, just as a percentage of increase. So yes, there is, that clearly shows the market demand for advanced practice providers, and we expect that to continue. It also raises questions in terms of panel size. But again, at the end of the day, it's team-based care. Physicians will always be significant. They are key to evaluating patients, particularly more complex patients. And as they work to the top of their license, which leads to, I believe, continued and greater job satisfaction, and they have a strong team working with them, I think that's how we achieve the efficiency. I think it is never to suggest this is a one-for-one exchange, if you will. There have been studies that suggest that advanced practitioners can provide maybe 60 to 70% of what an MD can provide. I want to be careful to say it's about team-based care. It's not just about substitution.
And when we're looking at long-term, one positive is that maybe more young people would pursue careers in healthcare, given the renewed hero status of our providers. And Gen Z already thinks they can save the world. And quite frankly, they might need to. What are your thoughts on that?
I hope they're all listening, Kelly. I couldn't agree more. We are going to need, obviously, with an aging population and the complexity of infectious diseases and everything else, we're going to need people in healthcare, and we need more innovative and young people to help us shake up the system. What can we do differently? Because when I think back nearly 40 years, sadly, there are so many core processes that just never have been, frankly, fixed. And we, between technology and innovation, and I think some new perspectives that young people bring to the table, I'm confident we will be able to do that. And of course, again, in a way, take advantage of this crisis to move the industry forward.
Absolutely.
Bill, I'm going to take a different tack. I think we're used to Joan being the compassionate, clinically focused voice. I'm going to ask you about some M&A stuff. We've already seen some big provider-to-provider system M&A this year. Do you think we're going to see more as they continue to need leverage? Do you think there could be more vertical M&A? And you cannot use the word Optum in your answer.
Yeah. The horizontal stuff will be interesting to see how it plays out, because there are clearly going to be systems in financial distress that have been working through days cash on hand. And we know there are some discussions, some deals that were in the works, let's say in the February, March timeframe. And those will represent the announcements that we'll hear over the next couple of months. There are a bunch that are on hold until people are able to demonstrate a stabilized financial or volume position. If you are a wealthy system right now and have strategic options, yeah, we expect some horizontal and vertical plays. But the other part of the industry is on the physician side and how physician groups may come together with private equity dollars, with outside parties and partnerships. The payers are likely to get into the action here because they can provide financial support to physicians. There was an announcement just this week that the Blues in North Carolina are kind of be extending financial support to physicians in that state, provided the physicians are willing to join the value-based care initiative that the Blues have been leading there. So the payers have been sitting on a lot of cash, and we should watch what they do related to the physician side and Medicare Advantage. And there is just a lot of money on the sidelines on the economy right now that will be ready to jump into healthcare in a variety of ways. And as Joan alluded to, there's a lot of private investment on the post-acute side and the behavioral health side. Let's watch what those parts of the industry go through over the next 6 to 12 months, even in a bad economy.
Should be interesting. So just to wrap up, is there anything that we should have asked you that we didn't?
I was thinking of one thing because it's come up on every call I've been on of late, which is the recognition now that on the administrative side, health systems are likely to keep a large percentage of the workforce working from home. Productivity has gone well. There are clearly parts of that workforce that want to get back, that have to be back. But one CEO said in a call I was on a couple weeks ago that this is a large system. We have 7,000 administrative employees working remotely. We know a lot of them don't need to come back. So what we have to learn is how to manage a workforce like that. We have very little experience except in a small number of departments. That's a big issue coming at us. Like, it's a good topic for a future podcast.
Yeah. And the one last thing I'd say as I think about some of the changes, just overall partnerships. Bill mentioned early public health department partnerships with health systems, but even competitors in terms of regional planning. I'd like to believe as a result of COVID that there will be enhanced regional planning in terms of healthcare needs. And so we're looking right now at doing some research around unique partnerships.
Great. Well, thank you, Joan and Bill, for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be interrogated by Trevor and me. It makes us feel like we're right back in the office. If you like what you're hearing, please also listen and subscribe to our colleague, Dr. Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. Tom discusses key healthcare trends through the clinical leadership lens. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you and stay healthy.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.